This is the Lou Rockwell Show.
I noticed that New York Times columnist Bill Kristol has endorsed Joe Lieberman as John McCain's vice president. Of course, Bill Kristol is one of the top American neoconservatives, editor of the Weekly Standard, is the son of Irving Kristol, sort of the founding father of that particular movement. Joe Lieberman is a very important neoconservative. John McCain is wanting to be the second all-neoconservative president after George W. Bush. We hear this term neoconservatism, but exactly what is this political ideology? The neoconservatives call themselves big government conservatives. Bill Kristol has called himself a national greatness conservative. This was after a famous article in his magazine, The Weekly Standard, urging vast new federal public works projects, all just as expensive as possible, just as huge as possible, just as impressive as possible to, well, I don't know, spend a lot of money and impress the American people with the power and the glory of the state, impress indeed the whole world with the power and glory of the American state. That's what neoconservatives are. They're focused on especially the warfare state. They believe in a police state. They believe in a welfare state. Irving Kristol famously said that we should have a welfare state, but it should be a conservative welfare state, meaning neoconservatives should be running it. They believe in big government right across the board. And this is today the conservative Republican ideology. How did that happen? How did that come about? Obviously, that hasn't always been the case. Neoconservatism began probably with Irving Kristol, who was a Trotskyite in his youth. And there's always been a Trotskyite aspect to the neoconservatives in terms of wanting a permanent revolution. Now, in their case, it's not a permanent communist revolution in the sense of the head of the Red Army, Leon Trotsky, but they want a permanent democratic revolution, which means imposing what they call democracy on the rest of the world at the point of a gun or at the point of a bomb. And of course, by democracy, it actually means U.S. government control. It doesn't actually mean elections, because, of course, if the wrong people win the election, as happens sometimes, that's not democratic. Democracy consists of the right people being elected, that is, people who are subservient to the U.S., and the neocons want to be able to make use of U.S. power for their own ideological purposes. Really, they want to transform the world, transform everybody's life through the all-powerful state. Again, these are known as conservative Republicans. The neoconservatives were the key intellectuals and the key public propagandists in lying us into war in Iraq, in the Afghan war. Now they're beating the drums for war in Iran. They also want, you know, at least a cold war on Russia. They want perpetual war, and they want especially war in the Middle East. They think that it's necessary for America to take total control of the Middle East with massive military bases in various Arab countries in order to maintain control of the oil for purposes of American hegemony, and also to protect the state of Israel. Another important founding father of the neoconservative movement was Norman Podoritz. Both he and Irving Kristol are still around. Podoritz wrote a famous article in the late 1960s in Commentary magazine, of which he was then editor. And by the way, his son today is editor of that same magazine. And he said that he was very worried about the Democrats, that they seemed to be carried away by anti-war feelings over Vietnam, and that he and the other neoconservatives, although that word wasn't really very much in use at that point, should leave the Democratic Party, enter the Republican Party, to try to assure that at least one political party would be always for war, always for global domination, always for imperialism, and always for all the state programs at home, which, of course, the Democrats were for. And indeed, the neoconservatives, before they entered the Republican Party, tended to be what was called at that time Scoop Jackson Democrats. Scoop Jackson was a senator from the state of Washington, a conservative Democrat. A conservative Democrat, as also in the case of Joe Lieberman, means being for big spending, big government, right across the board in every sense, in terms, again, of the police state, the warfare state, and corporate welfare as well as social welfare. In other words, the worst possible ideology you can think of in the American context. But the neoconservatives didn't do this on their own, that is, take over the conservative movement, take over the Republican Party. It really began with Bill Buckley. Bill Buckley was a brilliant young intellectual, just recently passed away in his 80s, who in the middle 1950s founded the magazine National Review. This magazine became, of course, the most important conservative intellectual magazine. I guess it still is. And Buckley took very, very free market, anti-big government positions in domestic affairs, but pro-imperialism, pro-Cold War, pro-warfare state, pro-national security state, pro-spying on Americans, the whole, what we think of as the Bush spying state. Buckley was advocating this back in the 1950s. In fact, in a famous article in Commonweal magazine, Buckley had even advocated the establishment of a, quote, totalitarian bureaucracy within our shores, unquote, in order to fight what he claimed was the necessity of a global war against the Soviet Union, which then, as later, of course, was an economic basket case. Founded National Review after leaving the CIA, a lot of connections between this sort of conservatives and the CIA, also between the neoconservatives and the CIA. Irving Kristol, in the 1950s, headed the Congress of Cultural Freedom, which was an entirely CIA-funded ideological propaganda outfit. I've always thought that the actual purpose, and I take this from the great Murray Rothbard, that the actual purpose of the founding of National Review was to eliminate the pro-peace, non-interventionist, anti-imperialist strains from the American right. Before World War II, the American right, what Murray Rothbard dubbed the old right, opposed Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal and his drive to war, opposed the state right across the board. This was, of course, suppressed during World War II, but it was started to come back in the 1950s. There were right-wingers, for example, who opposed Truman's war on Korea. So Buckley founded National Review, and he combined very free market domestic policies, which, by the way, he later all jettisoned, and became a statist right across the board. But in those early days, in order to entice right-wingers into supporting the warfare state, he made this combination, and he did indeed succeed, whether it was the people who would, a lot of the old right intellectuals had gone by this time, they were elderly, or they died, but those who hadn't died, men like John T. Flynn and Frank Chodorov, Buckley succeeded in marginalizing. In politics, Bill Buckley carried out his agenda through the Goldwater movement. In 1960, Barry Goldwater was a candidate for president. In 1964, he was the Republican nominee. He enticed a lot of libertarians, and certainly in domestic policies, he was as great as anybody before Ron Paul. He talked about abolishing the TVA. He talked about abolishing other socialist federal programs. He wanted to make Social Security voluntary. He wanted to have the divided sovereignty that Jefferson had envisioned so that the states would have powers independent of the federal government. He also opposed the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which, whatever the good intentions of some of its proponents, banned freedom of association and freedom of contract in important areas of American commercial life. However, in foreign policy, he was a mega warmonger. He joked about tossing atomic bombs into the men's room of the Kremlin. He was for the U.S. battling the Soviet Union in hot wars that might indeed turn into nuclear wars. And the Goldwater movement had a huge effect in also transforming the American right and, again, purging. And certainly this happened by 64, with the exception of Murray Rothbard and a few of the rest of us, purging the conservative movement of anybody who was not a warfare statist, a global hegemonist, an imperialist. Now, at the time, I just loved Barry Goldwater. I was active in those campaigns. I was a donor to the campaigns. Give a lot of money by my standard of living at that time. But I've come to the conclusion subsequently that the whole thing was a trick, a Buckleyite trick. In 1952, Barry Goldwater gave a famous speech to the Republican National Convention saying, look, we have to accept the New Deal and the Fair Deal of Harry Truman. We cannot seek to overturn any of these great social advances. We just have to move on from here and be modern Republicans and talk about how we can govern better than the Democrats. After the 64 election, Barry Goldwater became just sort of a standard warfare state, welfare state Republican. It was only when he was running for president in the run-up to 1960 and then through 1964 that he had any different ideas. Was the whole thing a trick? Maybe not. My own suspicion is that it was. Certainly, Bill Buckley made good use of it in transforming the American right into the neoconservative, pro-war, pro-global hegemony ideological movement that we know it as today. Go to the front page of LRC. On the left, there's a link for the Rothbard collection. Click on that, and then you'll be able to click on the cover of Betrayal of the American Right, and you'll also enjoy, in addition to Murray Rothbard's writing in that book, Tom Woods's wonderful explanatory introduction. Ron Paul, by the way, who's been heroic in opposing the neoconservatives. Obviously, Ron Paul's had many great speeches, but if you put Ron Paul and neoconservatism into Google on the LRC front page at the bottom, you'll come up with one of the great speeches he ever gave. Very, very controversial. He got huge attacks on him by various neoconservatives who were outraged at the idea of somebody telling the truth in Washington, D.C., something, of course, that happens to Ron Paul all the time, telling the truth and having bad guys outraged over it. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show. Produced by LouRockwell.com, the best-read libertarian website in the world. If you'd like to advertise on this podcast or on the website, email advertise@LouRockwell.com. And thanks for listening.